Welcome to Make Your Shit, a podcast about empowering creatives like yourself to overcome obstacles, the real ones and the ones you imagined, to push through moments of doubt and indecision, to find the joy in the work that you want to do, and ultimately, to give yourself permission to make the shit that you want to make. I'm your host, Kyle F. Andrews. I'm a screenwriter, actor, producer, and creative advocate. I've spent the better part of the last decade helping artists, industry pros, and people who didn't necessarily see themselves as creatives take strides to break into the business, hone their skills, and most importantly, find their voice in an industry that just doesn't want to listen. On today's show, I talk with Joseph Mwamba, writer's assistant on The After Party, currently streaming on Apple TV+, and the co-chair of the WGA Virtual Mix, a pre-Writers Guild-focused social empowerment organization. We discuss a number of topics of interest to both those up-and-coming writers and folks who are spending every day on the picket line, from the ongoing strike and how pre-WGA writers can and should get involved, to fostering a community that can lift you up in times of doubt, how the quickest way to be a successful producer is to become good at beebling, thoughts on overcoming the gap between your level of taste and your level of skill, and what love's got to do with it. But first, a quick message for another show I'm working on, Tinseltown Ghost Stories, which is currently raising funds on Seed and Spark. If you like what you hear, you can find more details in our show notes.
The glitz, glamour, the gorgeous stars descending grand staircases. You think you know about Hollywood's golden age of movie making, but what about the ghosts lurking just off screen? I'm Bianca Lopez, and I'd like to tell you a ghost story. But not just any ghost story. With our new podcast, Tinseltown Ghost Stories, I want to take you deep into the shadows of Hollywood's haunted backlots and bungalows and find the skeletons lurking in its ample closet space. In the course of our show, you'll be learning about the people who built Los Angeles, the scandals that rocked the industry, and the broken dreams that still echo on the boulevard. We're looking to raise enough funding to produce a first season consisting of 8 half-hour episodes. Our goal is to deliver a quality podcast that is engaging, thought-provoking, occasionally spooky, and always fun to listen to. Hollywood is more comfortable when its secrets stay hidden in the shadows. On Tinseltown Ghost Stories, we listen to what the dead have to say, because the darkness is so much less scary when you shine a little light on it.
Joseph Mwamba is a first-generation African-American young adult writer from Indiana. He's been named a screenwriter to watch in 2023, and as a writer's assistant, wrote an episode for season 2 of Netflix's upcoming action anime, Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell. Joseph was the writer's PA for season 4 of Netflix's psychological thriller You, and season 2 of Apple TV's mystery comedy The After Party. Before that, Joseph spent time as a double desk assistant at UTA. Joe co-runs WGA Virtual Mix, a pre-WGA group that holds Q&A panels with WGA writers, the monthly Miracle Mile Mixer, I've been, it's fantastic, and the hashtag pre-WGA Day Pickets. In combination with their partnership with Green Envelope Grocery Aid in June, WGA Virtual Mix helped provide over $15,000 in grocery funds to pre-WGA writers, support staffers, and lower-level WGA writers. So Joe works his butt off as a writer. He also works his butt off supporting writers. And the way he talks about the strike that's been going on, how it's affecting writers and lower level staffers and everyone, is it's just really remarkable to see somebody take up the call like Joe has. I've gotten to pick it with Joe. I've been to, like I said, the pre-WGA Miracle Mile Mixers. This conversation with Joseph, we didn't record it, but we spent, like, I don't know, 20 minutes talking about Midwest sports teams, because he's a big Notre Dame guy and I'm also a Notre Dame guy. You know, it's just, he's awesome. And I think when you listen to this conversation, you'll get a sense of not just how awesome Joe is, but in fact, the positive change that he is imparting in this industry in addition to being awesome. So here it is, my chat with Joseph Mwamba. Joseph, it is so good to have you on the show today. Thanks for coming on.
No, thanks for having me, Kyle.
It's nice because I actually saw you in real life just a little bit ago. You were out organizing a labor movement as part of the WGA writer strike that's going on in town right now, but it wasn't the WGA, it was pre-WGA. Can you tell me about how you got involved with pulling pre-WGA writers into the WGA pickets?
Yeah, I co-run this group called the WGA Virtual Mix, which is an organization that was created out of the pandemic. The WGA used to have events throughout the city, which we'll call like WGA Santa Monica Mixer or WGA Burbank Mixer. Like they used to have those type of things, and the pandemic happened, and Yelena War, who founded the group, was like, let's do that, but virtually, because we're all like, events aren't happening in real life for a while. So she created this group, and that grew. We're now at 2,500 members. I believe we're now entering our fourth year or third year of doing this. And I came in at some point in the first year, and she had these amazing programs where she brought in WGA writers to talk about their transition from emerging writer to becoming staff. And I had brought up at one point, like, hey, you have these amazing things, but we're not doing mixers. Can I just run it? And she said yes, and slowly but surely, I started integrating. I did those. Those started becoming more popular, and then Yelena brought me to become an official co-lead with her. And when the pandemic started dying down a bit, even though the pandemic didn't truly ever go away, but once we started getting comfortable going back outside, I started doing an event called the Miracle Mile Mixer, which is held, we do at All Season Brewery. We started that May 2020, so we've been doing this a year plus now. And so that's how I ended up getting into it, because I was just running events for this group. I just said, hey, let's do a mixer. And that slowly over the years started becoming me becoming doing events. And we do like Emmy parties, Oscar parties virtually, end of year party, holiday parties, and we always give prizes away. But then when the strike happened, Yelena and I just went straight into strike mode. She's done incredible work on the actual lines, on the pickets. And then I started thinking, what can we do as pre-WGA people to really help? And I thought the best way of doing that is on the same day we do the mixers, we pick it beforehand. And so it was really awesome. I was unfortunately got COVID on the first time we did it. So I missed my own event, which really was unfortunate. But we were able to do it the next month and I was able to be there, which is where we chatted. But it really just stemmed from, and on the picket lines, we're just solidarity, like us as pre-WGA, like showing solidarity as a big group to prove that we're not just out there like, you know, stealing your food and stealing your shirts and trying to shove scripts in front of writers, where we believe in their issues. And we know that they're doing it not just for themselves, but for the future of the WGA, which we believe that we will become, because we're aiming for that. We're striving for that. And we take it very seriously. So I wanted to show the WGA like, hey, we're not just, you know, a bunch of young kids that are, you know, who are looking at like something to do over the summer. Like we're sincerely caring about these issues and we're fighting alongside you. And I think that the two pre-WGA days that we've had, like the first day was at Paramount, and we actually they have 10 gates and we filled each gate, and did the same thing at Disney the next time, like we filled each gate. And I'm just like really happy of the amount of people who come and show their support and solidarity. We're really, really proud of that.
You know, it's really interesting to watch it happen. You know, labor movements like this are, they only happen once every so often, because the industry has gotten to a point where there has to be an inflection where the labor comes back and says, hey, you are not listening to what our needs are. Yeah. What do you say to a pre-WGA writer who has been working hard to make it into the industry to suddenly get to a point where the industry is no longer accepting anything? Is it just wait it out, or is it help be a part of where we're trying to get the industry to?
I think the answer can be both. Like I think that right now it's kind of interesting, because it's like we want to fight for we're fighting for the right to live. Like that's not a hyperbole. Like there are a lot of people right now that are working so hard, and they only get to work a few weeks out of the year, and not being able to pay for their rent, not being able to pay for bills, when these other people are making billions and billions of dollars and being able to pull it off. And so, and I don't want to go on a stump speech on that, but ultimately, like, so it seems very odd to, like, people are literally fighting for their lives on a lot of levels. So my whole thing is, like, right now, we should be doing everything we can to show the AMPTP, who's the other side of the negotiating tables for the WGA, and all the other unions as of right now. They just agreed with the DGA, but currently negotiating with SAG. Well, actually, by the time this podcast comes out, the next day,
I might be on the streets as a SAG strike.
Yes. Ultimately, my big thing is just like, way out is, yes, like right now, we are focusing on this fight. And that does not mean don't write, like do write, do get better, do improve as a writer, like take the time to do that. But also it's okay to not do that. It is okay to go out and picket and fight for these issues, because we're not going to be able to do that for another 3 years once the deal is done. And so it's kind of like a weird answer of like, you can do both. Mm. But for me personally, it's just like, no, I can't sit by and watch. Like, I'm still writing, but I'm not sending that to anybody. One, because it breaks the WGA rules. But two, just because like, that's not the point. Like, we need to be out there. A lot of our people are struggling, not just the WGA, but especially pre-WGA. Like, we have a whole thing of support staffers that are really, yes, everyone is hurt, but the support staffers who are making way less money than all of them are the ones who are absolutely struggling. That's why we partnered with Green Envelope Grocery Aid to provide $100 to people who were negatively affected by the strike. And we were able to give off, with the partnership, we were able to give off $15,000 worth of aid. And Green Envelope has been able to at least give away, at least at this point of the recording, roughly $40,000 total to people who needed the help. And so, yeah, which is... It sounds great, but also like that just tells you how bad it is. It just how many people really are struggling. And we're on close to day 70. What's going to happen on day 100, you know? And so it's not going to get better. So enable to view that, and obviously to their ability, obviously, if you can't be out here, like don't. But if you can, like, it's going to get worse as we get going. So keep going out there, keep picketing, keep being loud about this, so we can get the AMPTP back to invite the WGA back, so they can get back to the table to negotiate, so we can get back to jobs that can pay people to survive. And so not just, and while this is a fight with the WGA, writers' assistants and script coordinators are part of IATSE, so it's a different guild. But overall, just going like, if the WGA's deal goes up and becomes better, that lifts everybody else up, including the support staffers that absolutely need it too. So
with pre-WGA writers, some of them I've heard have been wanting to get out on the picket line, but just aren't sure where to start. What do you say to somebody who wants to get out there, but isn't sure how to take the first step?
And I totally understand where they're coming from, because it is it's scary. Like, it's especially when it's going into a world that you don't truly fully understand. So my first thought process is, okay, so social media, use the thing, right? First off, if you're willing to use social media, we'll start there. So many people on Twitter, so many people on Instagram that are going out to the pickets constantly, like myself, that before I got COVID was going to every picket every morning, and I would post every day where I'm going. Please come, say hello, we'll walk together. I know for a fact a wonderful woman named Dana and Robin, both of them have been going to CBS Radford, but also going around, and they've always invited people like, hey, we are going to be here, please come, introduce yourself, you can walk with us. Like, there's plenty of people who are going out and making themselves open to being talked to or walked up to. So that way, if you are alone, you're only alone for 2 seconds, because the moment you get to the picket and you see somebody that you know, hey, I can go over to them and they'll introduce you to people. That's one. Two, you can go on any group, especially ours, WG Virtual Mix, and say like, I want to go picketing. Does anyone else want to go picketing at this location? And you're going to find people who are going to either be there already or people who are willing to come, because you don't know how many others feel the same way you do. And also, like, I want to go, but I'm nervous. If you get a bunch of those people together and admit like, hey, we want to do this, but we're nervous, let's all collectively go to this thing together. That just makes it so much stronger, right? Really brings in solidarity in that too. But if you are not somebody who, where you're not no longer on social media, whether it's because Elon is a horrible person or if you, or is a mental health issue, one of my main things is just when you come to these things, you find a blue tent that's going to be the main tent, and you sign in, and you can literally tell the WGA staff that's there. It's like, hey, I'm alone. I really don't know I really don't know next steps. Can you please help me? And I'm not kidding you. I don't intimately know, but I know every single lot coordinator because of the events I've had to run. I know every lot coordinator pretty much at every lot, at least on the west side, and every single one of them will be incredibly helpful for you and be able to guide you and, if necessary, walk with you if it comes down to that. They are significantly wonderful people, because they're not like, you know, C-suite level execs. They're human beings. They're writers. A good chunk of them were just writer's assistants not even a year before. They understand, they know, they get it. And so they are there to help you and keep you safe. So it's also okay to be, I totally get the nerves. There's plenty of people on social media that are going to be able to help you, who can either be there for you, or if you put go up and say, I want to be here, a lot of people will do it with you. But if social media is not your thing, do go to that blue tent, do introduce yourself and just say, I don't know what next steps are. I'm a little bit nervous. They will take so good care of you. I promise you that, because that's why we're out here. It's about solidarity. It'd be very odd if you arrived and went, I'm alone, and they would just go, so? and if they do, I want you to specifically tell me that so that I could tell somebody and that, but that's not going to happen.
I do want to second that, because I had my allergist appointment across the street from Disney, and I walked over alone. I was like, what do I do here? And then I think within 2 hours, Joseph and Yelena had introduced me to about a dozen people, and I had a new cabal to walk with. So it is certainly a celebratory atmosphere out there as well. There's room for everybody at these strikes. Of course, ideally, there will be a time in this industry when the strikes are over and we're all back to work. When it comes to the work, you are somebody that I've seen straddles both writing and producing. Is it true you have a master's in producing?
Yeah, I have a master's in fine arts in producing back at Chapman University that I got in 2019.
I am going to be honest with you. This is the first time I've ever heard you could even get a degree in producing. That is a very, very cool thing. How has that helped you as far as being a working writer has gone? Aside from knowing how to produce stuff, how has that helped you as a working writer?
Again, when you say working writer, I have been on one show. So I only have the perspective of being on the one show. It's not all-encompassing. But I will say learning how to produce and then being on the ground actually producing shorts that we did and translating that, the number one thing I learned is that being a producer, yes, there's numbers. Yes, there's about the logistics, but your number one job is people management. Mm. And when you go into the world and try to be a TV writer, that's ultimately what you're walking into. People management. A showrunner's job is literally like, okay, let me take care of these 150, 200 people and make sure that we are keeping the trains moving. And so being one of the cadets, I put that in air quotes, sorry, this is not a visual medium. Being somebody who is one of the cadets, but also understands like what they are mentally going through and thinking of. One, my number one job is to listen. And part of that listening job is also understanding. And when you're from the producer side of that and being able to be a writer, you just get that a lot quicker. It's not about trying to prove that you're going to be a great writer or a great contributor. Like, they already know that's why you're there. So just trying to be... trying to help the showrunner do their job the best way possible, which is giving ideas and stuff like that. But also just the number one job is just listening, just being there for them, being a yes and in the room constantly.
Producer using actor lingo there. I love that. It all though kind of feeds the same kind of approach to getting the work done, right?
Right. And just like understanding, like, because again, if you're managing people, then you also are understanding yourself as far as like where you are in the chasm of chaos that is creating art. And so even though I was a producer, and obviously you're closer to the boss on that end, so you're it trickles down. You also are very aware when you are not the boss and you are. So also know, like, just knowing where you are and being aware of like, hey, you guys have to think about this when you're writing the scripts, understanding like, hey, I can't have on a 30-page script, I can't have 25 locations. I need to make sure that we're not like going crazy or making sure that we don't have 30 more characters to introduce issues. Like, just having those thoughts. And while it may be a little bit straightforward for a lot of people, especially if they don't know, like, you don't know what you don't know, especially when you're starting off as a writer and you don't have, if you didn't go to a grad school or read books, like, sometimes you walk into it and your idea is, oh, well, I must show that I am smart and significant, so I have to give ideas all the time, or I'm going to make sure that this outline is like completely like so detailed. And then but being a producer is like, oh, but I know what a story area looks like. I know what an outline looks like. I know what a script's supposed to look like. I know the structure. I know, like, it just makes it easier. And it makes sure it helps the producer say less things to you. Have to say like, hey, this is not how we do things. Like, it just becomes, it's less of a burden on the showrunner or the higher ups, the upper level writers, to have to explain these things to you. Or if they do, it's easy for you to recognize, like, oh, I recognize that, I understand that. And so it's easy to move on to the next thing.
So you're saying even if you don't intend to be a producer in your career, mm-hmm. it's probably mm-hmm. good to get some production experience so that when you are working on a production, you actually know where you fit into the system.
Right. And also just an understanding, like, it's no different than, like, if you want to be a writer, most of the time people are like, they want to become the showrunner. They want to ultimately get to a point where they are in charge of a business. And the best way to do that, if you're not going to be on the ground, like every, like working for 10 years, moving up, like having an understanding of everyone's job is super important mm-hmm. for you to do your job well. You understanding that if you decide that somebody's going to wear a funny hat, that's going to affect the wardrobe and costume. If you are going to start a new, if you're going to have a location, it's going to be the same location, but then you're like, hey, birthday party. You're thinking, oh, that's going to be production design. Like, that's going to add to their stuff. But if you in your mind go like, hey, I remember the showrunner said that they're squeezing a lot of money into another certain episode. Maybe you don't do a birthday. So then you're not adding to the budget for production design or making it more difficult. So the production designer then has to say, hey, we can do this, but it's going to be done in a certain way. Like, it just adds chaos. So being able to see that and go, okay, let me maybe do a different thing. But we don't have to. Maybe it's a birthday, but it's the day that nobody remembered. And so, like, there's no decorations, no nothing, like stuff like that. Those are simple things. I would say the quickest way as being a producer, thinking about other people's jobs, thinking about like how the whole thing works, trying to make it as easy as possible for everybody, as smooth as possible for everybody. It's just, I think that's a benefit. That's no different from getting rid of producer, like you being a writer and understanding acting, you being a writer and understanding directing, like you're going to just make the other person's job significantly easier knowing what everybody's job is.
Mm. You also worked for a small time at a agency as an assistant to the agent. Is there anything you learned inside the agent atmosphere that has helped you as a creative getting your stuff out there?
I will say, I'll admit, unfortunately, when I was at UTA on a double desk, the writers actually had fired their agents. So I was not able to have too much interaction with at least WGA members. I had a lot of interactions with what I would call WGA writers who then got jobs and then immediately had to fire us. But I will say the one cool thing I really like, what I love talking to people about with my time at UTA, is I absolutely learned how to create heat for myself. As a pre-WGA writer, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, do contests and when you win those contests, that creates heat for you. And then that moves on. And I kind of learned through the agency that, like, you do not have to go through that route. Like, it is, the industry is talking about producing, about, like, people management. I feel like the number one thing that helps you move to the next step up is people will say, you know, networking, like moving way up. But I view it more as like looking at people as human beings and getting to know them as human beings. And it's connecting, but it's relationships. You are creating relationships, genuine relationships with people. And when you are able to do that over a certain amount of time, you eventually create this network of people who, it's not just a network of people. It's a network of people who care about you, who know you, who know your goals. But you also know that their favorite drink is Hennessy and their favorite show is Vanderpump Rules. And you can have those conversations in that tissue. So that way you can catch up with them and actually know about their lives and their kids and all that sort of stuff. And not just like, oh, I know that they're work at NBC and I have a show perfect for them because I saw their mandate. Let me reach out to them. And I feel like once you create that massive group of people, the moment something good does happen to you, then you turn it on and you go like, hey, just letting you know that I did this one thing. And that's how heat gets started for you. And then once you start getting those meetings and then you tell those other people like, hey, just letting you know, I have a meeting with such and such and such and such. And then suddenly you start having other meetings with stuff. And so like, and then people who see you doing well start going like, hey, I care about Kyle. He's doing really well. I see he's doing meetings. Is there anything I can do? Well, I think that there's this other person I do remember saying that they were looking and reading for people. Maybe I can, and that literally that exact thing I just explained to you is exactly how I got my manager. And so I feel like working at UTA, it just really emphasized what heat really means. It's not, let me just throw things, sometimes it is just throwing spaghetti at a wall, but if you're really strategic and smart about it, is yeah, you view it as you just throwing anything at a wall, but really it is these people who have fostered great relationships. Like literal relationships, not just connect, like literal relationships, and going, hey, I really love this guy. You're really going to love him. Give him a shot. And then you start seeing people really being into it. And then that grows and grows and grows to a point where now suddenly everybody wants this client. And I watched two African Americans, the Igbo twins, Adame and Adana, who created a film called Honk for Jesus Save Your Soul that got on Peacock. And I literally watched them go from these two amazing Black women who wrote this incredibly fun animated spec that got some traction and got them an agent, but nobody knew who they were. And watching them from when I started to watch them blow up and be wanted by these big people at these big companies doing all, and I'm the one setting up all these meetings, and watching these people who did not know who they were with, and my one of the agents, Jed Baker, who was amazing at this, just was like, trust me, like these guys, you're gonna want to meet with these guys. These guys are gonna be amazing. You're gonna want to work with these guys. And or these ladies. And man, how fast it went from I love this script, what else you got? They had another script ready. Mm-hmm. And when they wrote the script, and that script, eventually three companies wanted it. Three companies were willing to buy it. And then suddenly they were staffing at places or getting staffed at places. And then they promptly fired us after their first gig. But like, it was just one of those things of like, oh wow, that's how it's done. It truly, yes, it's talent, but it's more that it's about like, this is a people business. Mm-hmm. And I literally watched it happened before me. So that was the longest answer to such a simple question. But I think that is one of the things I definitely take from being at an agency, is not just relying on people too much. It is relying on yourself and creating that heat for yourself and fostering relationships that actually matter, that even you could do nothing with this person for 10 years and it doesn't make a difference. Like, mm-hmm. you made a great connection with somebody.
I think that you hit on something that I feel creatives, We always are told, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You can do this. The best support system that you have in this industry is yourself and your own things. But I also tend to find that because this industry can be so unempathetic, we can start getting into our own downward swirling spiral if we are always trying to rely on our own self-image to keep us positive. Do you feel like networking in this sense, like this genuine approach to peopling, I guess I would call it peopling with people. Yeah. Do you think that can help you stay positive in an industry where sometimes they don't just want to help, where the industry doesn't feel like it needs you all the time?
I think that ultimately where you're coming from is the mental health of a writer when they're, because look, I've always written, but I'll say I have been trying to write professionally, I'll say for three to 4 years. And I would, there were times of bad mental health. I like to think that I'm generally a positive person that tries to help other people, and I like meeting other people and having genuine connection and relationships, but that doesn't mean that stops me from the massive imposter syndrome that I have. And that grew in the sense of, oh, wow, I'm now a support staffer. Oh, wow, I'm a writer assistant. Oh, wow, I'm writing an episode. Oh, wow, I have a manager. Like, sometimes there are levels of like, are you sure you want me? And that definitely happens. And let me tell you, that happens with everybody. A very select few who may not, but everybody has that moment. I think that ultimately, when you're looking for the people, that when you're connecting with people, when you're making relationships with people, that doesn't mean that everyone will fit into the world that you are looking for. There are people who are personal heroes of mine that I've loved since I was a kid over the shows that I've watched, and have met them and realized these are not going to be the people who are going to be in my camp. These are not going to be the people who are going to yes and my career.
And that's important to realize, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's essential, because it's not, your job is not to be, your job is to throw love out there. And yes, it would be wonderful if everybody loved you back, but it's not your job to force everybody to love you. Your job is to become the best self you can be, and then find others who are actively trying to do that and fit with what your best self is. So that way, when the downside things happen, when you start having the anxiety and the imposter syndrome, you have a support system that has your back, because you would do the same for another person who is also feeling that same way. The amount of times I have to, yesterday, somebody was being down on themselves and I literally was saying, no, you are a brilliant person. You are clearly amazing. You do all these things for the community. What are you talking about? But if you surround yourself with the wrong people, or if I would like to say people who are hopping socially, who are just like trying social hoppers, They're not going to get that because all they're doing is like trying to go to the people who are the next best thing so they can move their career forward. And that may happen, but at least on the mental health side, like then it's you're around people who all only care about that. As opposed to, at least with all the events that we try to do with pre-WGA and why we do Miracle Mile Mixer, is so that way we give you an opportunity in a place where it's like, hey, look, every time somebody comes, I go, look, my goal is by the end of tonight, you have one person that you want to get coffee with after this. Mm-hmm. The goal is not to, hey, I'll see you next month. Like, I don't want that. I want to get to a point where we don't need Miracle Mile Mixer anymore. That'd be wonderful if we just didn't need it anymore, where everybody knew everybody, everybody liked each other, and we didn't need to have a place where we need to foster, like, because it's already happening. We don't need more mixers for it. That would be a perfect scenario, but we're not there yet. So creating these opportunities for people to find their support system, find the people who are actually going to be there for them. So my heart goes out to people who are who feel that they've spiraled or are currently spiraling, feel like they're not good enough. There's a clip from Ira Glass that talks about The Gap, which talks about the amount of when you're in art, there's the skill that you have and there's the taste that you have. And the gap is that. And usually when people start trying something, like trying to write, they see their taste is way out there and their skill is here and they give up. They go like, that's too big of a gap. And Ira Glass's point is like, no, keep going, keep working. Because even when you're making mistakes, even when you're not, you feel like you're not doing better, you are getting better. You are improving because that gap, while slow, eventually starts coming, becomes a lesser gap and a lesser gap and a lesser gap until they get really close. And I don't think it ever closes because otherwise you never keep improving. And I think you always can keep improving. But ultimately, where your gap is year one, it will not be where your gap is in year two. Like you will always get better. So keep pushing it. And so anyone that's spiraling, I hope that you find that clip somewhere and watch it because it really spoke to me. But also with the peopling, don't just make yourself available to everyone. Don't be overly selective, but like find the people who are friendly, people who are definitely in your world who are wonderful, but then find the people who are actually going to help you be the best you can be. That doesn't just mean the best writers. That doesn't just mean the best connectors. It doesn't just mean the best producers. It means the best people who are going to make you stronger as a human. Mm. And when you spiral, they'll show themselves as people who can be there for you. And if there aren't, that's okay. They can go back to being wonderful people that are just not going to be part of that world. And that's okay.
That's the sort of sentiment where I immediately want to start working for you because it feels like that being on set with you would actually be a way that we could get the work done, but also get the joy of the work done. And sometimes you have to have a little bit of joy with this stuff, you know?
Yeah, I just truly believe, like, I mean, granted, I have to say, you read Maureen Ryan's book, Burn It Down, and you just hear of all these horrific things. And by the way, by the end of the book, she does come up with solutions for it. But I just truly believe, like, and I'm so sorry, the name is not going to come to me. I think her name's Melinda in the book. But like, female writer who had not a great experience, become a showrunner later and foster a place and community of love and compassion for others, which then trickles down to those writers who then want to go out and be amazing. The Hollywood Reporter had a podcast where they brought in like writers from Happy Endings. And I'm going to be completely wrong about the number, but I'm just going to throw it out that like, I think of the 23 writers they had, 20 of them became showrunners. Yeah, that's not somewhere around those numbers. But like you talk to the showrunner and he's like, I've never written a show before. Like I just had an idea. They said, go for it. And I'm like, I don't know. And how many people do we know who, or maybe we don't personally know, but like how many stories start with, I didn't know what I was doing, so I needed to get control. So I just, terror and fear was the way I did it. They did it. And then they get given the genius auteur thing. And so like nobody ever stops them. This guy literally was like, David Casper was like, I don't know. So he trusted his people. And when he trusted his people, they then in turn showed their strengths and their love and their compassion. And that just created a fostering, loving community where even when the show was over, they still went on and created amazing TV shows. Why the hell would you not want that to be the new normal? Or the normal? Why is it new? Like, just make that the normal. Because that just makes sense to me. Why would you want to make it, I'm not going to say their names on your podcast, but make it like a horrible work environment where people want to leave the industry.
We can name and shame people here, but I appreciate that you are being kind.
I just don't want them coming after you. That's what I'm protecting you.
Bring it on. I'm ready for those jerks.
But yeah, I just find it. So you saying that is incredibly, incredibly kind. But like, I also think that there's a ton of other people who believe the same thing I do. And I think that's why the pre-WGA world is so wonderful, because I think that we see the world that we're going into and we all see it as an issue. And people who in the WGA who see that world and know it's an issue. That's why we have PayUp Hollywood that are doing amazing things. That's why we have Grocery Aid doing amazing things. That's why we have ECF that's doing amazing things. A woman in film doing amazing things. Like, I can keep going on and on. But like, they see a problem and they're finding solutions to it. And hopefully by the time we get there, and it's been a couple of years, we get to a point where we still need them, but we won't need them as much anymore. Just making the world a little bit better each time. Sorry for speechifying, you know, like woo-woo, but like stuff. But at the same time, I think it's super important, especially when we're out in the picket lines trying to foster community. Like, the tide rises all boats. And I don't understand a single human being and why they wouldn't want to be the people who sinks boats. This doesn't, like, why? So anyway, that's my 2 cents on that.
I mean, it's great. And hey, never apologize for your clear leadership qualities, because you are the way you speak, you are a listener, but clearly that listening has led to some great speaking for you, because I think what you have said is actually really important.
That, but also I want to acknowledge that, like, there's also a level of toxic positivity. Like, you should also, like, when things are not going great, acknowledge that things are not going great either, and talk to people, have people you can talk to. So that's why I was saying, like, I'm sorry, because, like, it's not always rainbow and sunshine.
No,
it's,
I think you're right. You need to find your crowd. You need to find the people who, you know, so there are a lot of folks who will throw rainbows at you, and the reason they're throwing rainbows is that inside they're nothing but a rainstorm. So you really do have to find, yeah, you like that?
Oh, yeah. I love that.
You really have to find the people who are bringing a little bit more of that sunshine, even if they're not wholly, it's always sunny in Southern California. However, you didn't just talk the talk, you walk the walk. And you actually have a project coming out where you got to work on it. It's called The After Party. It is coming out on Apple TV Plus. I am very, very excited about it, because I tend to really enjoy, I just watched Silo, I'm watching Swagger. I just love Apple Plus shows, even though I'm out on the street protesting that they need to pay the writers more, and they should, damn it. But as somebody who worked on this project, which of course was finished before the strike, will be coming out soon. What was that experience like for you? Can you tell us a little bit about working on The After Party?
Oh, yeah. So I was a writer's PA on season 2 of The After Party, which will be coming out the week this podcast comes out. So by the time you listen to this, it will already be out. I just really loved that experience, because Chris Miller and Anthony King, the showrunners, allowed me to be in the room as often as I wanted. And, you know, it's one thing to know how to write. It's another thing to know how a writer's room operates. And people can say all the things that they, I mean, obviously they're in the writer's room, they can say whatever they want. But a lot of people can say what happens in one, but it's just completely different when you're in it. Being in there, from blue sky to story to outline, all those things, like the madness that goes into constructing a television show, is just brilliant. It is magnificent. It is beautiful. And being able to be given front row seats, and I'm not kidding you, front row seats to Chris Miller was a godsend. Like, being able to chat with him, have fun with him, along with Anthony King and all the other writers as well, where they didn't make me feel like I was just another body that was getting them lunches. Like, they really, truly made me feel like I was one of them. But also, I knew my place. They said, hey, be welcome. You're welcome to pitch. And I did not pitch. I pitched, like, I think 3 things, 4 things, maybe the entire time I was there. But to give me the encouragement to do that, like, really, one, helped me understand how to pitch. 2, made me understand that writer's room isn't just that, like, everybody's amazing at writing or everybody's really good at the one thing. Like, I thought, okay, After Party, everyone's going to be great with mystery. That's not true. They all have an understanding of it and get it and love it. But you have 2 sets of writers that are just, they're the joke makers. They're the guys who are just, like, absolutely, like, coming up with the joke. Another one is brilliant with structure, who can go, like, if you mess with one thing on act 2 of episode 3, she's going to know right away that, like, yeah, but that messes up episode 7, act 5, like, can just come like that so fast. You have somebody who's just really great with dialogue and understanding, like, yeah, that's fine, but, like, here's how you bring it up a notch. You have somebody who's really great with structure. Like, it is incredible that it's really just, like, people with superpowers. And you have enough people, you have enough of those people who become the Justice League. And that is, like, really, that is what the show is. And really, then Chris Miller is Batman. Anthony King is Superman, and they're just trying to lead these people to make sure that we can protect these characters and create the great stories that we can do. So it was really an education, and that truly helped me understand when I went on to You, season 4, as a writer's PA, having that understanding and going like, oh, that's how they did it as a streamer. Greg Berlanti shows tend to do the broadcast model, so they shoot while they are writing. And so understanding that model and then moving on to the next show, I was so much more prepared to understand how they did things. And then from that, moving on to the show that I ended up writing on for Splinter Cell, I had experiences being on a stream. I had experiences being on a streamer that worked like a broadcast. Or I should say, sorry, the show specifically worked a broadcast. Like all the things I learned from You, but also mainly the things I learned on After Party, I was able to literally apply that. Understanding blue skying and the ideas that come from that, trying to make things work and understanding what is my strength that I bring to the room. And that's going to maybe change every room I go to, mainly going to be the same, but it can change based on what those needs are for the show. So I truly do not believe that I would be the writer I am today if it was not for the time I had on the After Party. I just learned so much about the process, but also about writing itself. Mainly through a big thanks to Anthony King and Chris Miller for giving me that opportunity.
I haven't had the opportunity to get a sense of what your writing is like when it's actually on screen. And I gotta believe that a person as welcoming and open and kind as you are can also do some really cool creative work. So I just want to say thank you for coming on the show today, Joseph, and helping writers who may have questions that they can't find answers to get some clarity, both in terms of what the strike means and how they should hold themselves in the rest of the industry. So thanks, Joseph.
Oh, of course. I'm so happy to do it. Seriously, anyone that's listening that's struggling and going through a lot, there's plenty of resources. They can please reach out to your close ones. But also, there are so many resources that you can go to. And please reach out and we can send out those resources as well. But imposter syndrome is among all of us. So just find those people. And we'll be here for when you're ready.
That's well said, Joseph. Thank you. Do you have time to stick around and play some stupid fucking questions with smart fucking people?
Yes, of course.
All right. In just a second, we will be back with Joseph Mwamba and stupid fucking questions for smart fucking people.
The glitz, glamour, the gorgeous stars descending grand staircases. You think you know about Hollywood's golden age of movie making, but what about the ghosts lurking just off screen? I'm Bianca Lopez, and I'd like to tell you a ghost story. But not just any ghost story. With our new podcast, Tinseltown Ghost Stories, I want to take you deep into the shadows of Hollywood's haunted backlots and bungalows and find the skeletons lurking in its ample closet space. In the course of our show, you'll be learning about the people who built Los Angeles, the scandals that rocked the industry, and the broken dreams that still echo on the boulevard. We're looking to raise enough funding to produce a first season consisting of 8 half-hour episodes. Our goal is to deliver a quality podcast that is engaging, thought-provoking, occasionally spooky, and always fun to listen to. Hollywood is more comfortable when its secrets stay hidden in the shadows. On Tinseltown Ghost Stories, we listen to what the dead have to say, because the darkness is so much less scary when you shine a little light on it.
All right, and we are back with Joseph Mwamba to answer some stupid fucking questions. All right, Joseph, these are rapid fire questions, so as quick and as stupidly as you can answer. What Muppet do you most identify with?
Kermit.
Kermit? Why Kermit?
Oh my goodness. Great leader, always looking out for others, even though some of them are really crazy and stupid.
Love that answer. Which do you remember the TGIF comedies on ABC Friday nights?
A good chunk of them, but not all of them.
If you had to live next door to one of those families, which one would it be and why?
You're killing me, man. Family matters.
So would you be Urkel's neighbor as well? Or would you take Urkel's space?
The other side.
The other side of it. I get that. Although I would rather take Urkel than Kimmy Gibbler, I'll tell you that. On Full House, you know?
Kimmy. I like Kimmy a lot.
Different strokes for different folks on that one.
Exactly.
What is your comfort TV show to fall asleep to?
New Girl.
Love that. Was that a great show? Was that one of your favorites as you were in school?
Yeah. Oh, was I in school during that time? I think so. Yeah. That show constantly makes me laugh. And there are a lot of shows that do that, but it's one of those shows that like, I love it enough where I don't like rewatching stuff. But That's the one show I can rewatch and I will laugh every single time.
Captain Planet wise, are you earth, fire, wind, water, or heart?
Art, like not even, yeah.
Yeah. Feels like I knew the answer when I asked you that question.
Yeah. I know that's not the sexy selection, but heart, man, I'm sorry.
It's right. You got to go where the heart takes you. If you were stuck on a desert island with just a DVD player, TV, and the power to play them, what movie would you have with you?
This is going to be a fucking weird answer, but Amelie.
Amelie! That may have been the best answer anyone has ever given. Is it because you want to be reminded to appreciate the small things in life?
It's the small things in life. It's a film of, I don't know many films that are about two incredibly weird people that still found each other. And I don't know what's a more powerful story than that. Like, I sincerely don't.
That will give you hope. You just have to make sure you have your garden gnome with you on that island.
Oh, absolutely. It's required.
What fantasy creature, monster, or cryptid would you most want to do a movie or TV show about?
The pumpkin people in the show Over the Garden Wall. Episode 2, where they go into this village where it's all people who have pumpkins for heads. And I apologize if I'm ruining for anybody but it's also been like a decade. But they find out that they're really under the pumpkin heads, they're skeletons. And it's actually people from their normal world who have passed on. And this is the place that they go before they pass to the next life, like the next thing. So I would love a show of that. That would be really cool.
Sold. That's a great answer.
Yeah.
That is such a unique answer and a great answer. And it also brings me back to Jack Pumpkinhead in Return to Oz, which if you have never seen Return to Oz, folks, let's make sure you watch that movie. Who is your cartoon crush?
Oh, hands down, Roxanne, Goofy movie. Hands down, not even close.
See, that's where you and I were millennials of a different generation, because I was pre-Goofy movie and you sound like you're post-Goofy movie. That's the millennial, that's the elder millennial versus younger millennial distinction, I think, is actually the Goofy movie.
Yes. No, she, yeah, that's embarrassing, but also, yeah.
Ah, I'll take it. It's a great answer. Finally, what is your movie theater snack of choice?
They are the mini Starbursts that they have at the AMC at the Grove. I love me some mini Starbursts. Those are my faves.
Love that. Not a bad answer. Not a bad, unless you said specifically the lemon ones, then we would have issues. Well, thank you, Joe, for stopping by. And those are great answers to these very, clearly very stupid questions.
They were fun questions. I liked them. I kind of liked it.
It's kind of you.
If you'd like to support the show, click that follow button, share us with your friends, and give us a shout out on Instagram and Twitter at MYS Podcast. If you'd like to follow me, I'm on Instagram at Kyle F. Andrews. For those listeners who'd like to go the extra mile and help me make this shit, we also have a no-pressure Patreon over at patreon.com/MYS Podcast. You can find these links and more in our show notes.
I'm your host, Kyle F. Andrews. My consulting producer is Emily Castro. Our theme song is Keep On Dancing by Monday Hope.
Until next time, keep making that shit.